Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us on the show today here in Lafayette. In about an hour or so, I'll travel over with Dick Girardi and his brother Joe to West Lafayette, where Penn State will take on Purdue. It is the two of the greatest turns that you ever make in driving, Matt. Because you're going down and you have to make a turn at a left turn at the Neil Armstrong Hall of Engineering and then make the first right on John Wooden Drive.
Well, those are two landmarks.
In terms of landmarks, it doesn't get any stronger than that.
No question.
And then when you're going to park the car, you park the car across the street from the Drew Brees Academic Center.
How about that?
I mean, pretty good.
That is very strong altogether.
I mean, I haven't felt, you know, like you look at it and go, wow. Since I went past the Kevin Hurt bowling alley. Called Suit Lanes. Right. And it's really cool because we go up there like Kevin Hurt bowl, and it's just three pins sitting there on the sign. Emblematic of a reminder. All right. I could sit there and bowl 10 strings. I couldn't get 297, okay?
Same.
All right. So, let's get to our play-by-play call of the day.
And the heave by Wendell Moore. Lines back up with Hurt. And contact and a foul call, and I believe it's going on Florida State.
It is. The official is saying that... That Florida State was in Matthew Hurt's cylinder. It was Trent Forrest. It is very unusual. Let's put it that way.
To himself. I mean, that's
yeah. That's not a cylinder play.
No.
That's he thought the referee just didn't want to deal with it. That's not a cylinder issue. That's two guys going after a rebound.
And that's what Dan Shulman and. Sean McDonough and Jay Billis last night at Cameron Indoor. Duke finally won it over Florida State. All right. Let's get to Newark International Airport, where for Neil Coulong, he wanted to get close to where the XFL is. And maybe Newark International is about as close as he'll get. Right, Neil?
That's exactly right. Exactly right. After all the weekend of hard-hitting action that we sat through, and it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. Newark's the center of the XFL world, as far as I know, and it's a great place to change planes. So here we are.
Yes, and here we are. We got you for a few minutes because you had to board at 2:20. All right. You mentioned the XFL, so... when you look at, it's just an initial snapshot. What was your initial snapshot of it?
It was probably exactly how I thought that it would be. There were some interesting moments. There was some fun stuff. I think they did a really good job marketing it, for sure. The product in and of itself, I mean, you can't really put lipstick on a dress on a pig and call it something else. I mean, I think it was exactly what we figured that it would be. It kind of just felt like there was something a little bit different about it this time. You know, that there was more of it felt like acceptance from a lot of people that watched it. They kind of understood that this was the way it was going to be. There was some decent play. There was some sloppy play. a lot of stuff that you probably see in week one of the NFL season, to be honest. So maybe it'll get better. You know, I had committed to watching it anyway, just to kind of see what they're going to do with it and where it's going to go. But overall, I think its best days are ahead of it, and that's kind of what you'd expect after one game. But not terrible. It wasn't a disaster. It's worth tuning into with nothing else on. Maybe that's just me, but there's a market of people that think like that. So, I think more people will kind of, keep a passing interest in it as the weeks go on, and we'll see where it ends up.
Well, I think what's going to happen out of this, Neil, is that you're going to have a couple dozen guys out of this being in NFL camps and making teams.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. And the reason I say that is, on a 53-man roster, 22 guys are on the field for two teams at a time. There are a lot of athletes that you need to field an NFL team. I think there are a lot of players that, have the build, have the athletic makeup to be professional players. And they end up just kind of getting washed away. It could be just through, untimely injury or something like that. They get in training camp their rookie year. They're undrafted. They're trying to make a name for themselves. They don't have much of an opportunity to do that, if they have any opportunity at all. For the most part, they're out there to fill a training camp roster, to have guys out there to run reps for everybody else. I think there are ways to find players who, with more of a closer look at them, with more film beyond college, they might fill in as a fifth wide receiver, as a punt gunner. You see players like that getting cut all the time, and most of them, in my experience, is injury related. It's not a career threatening injury. It's a hamstring injury. It's a rolled ankle or something that's going to make the player not 100%. Kind of robbing them of the one opportunity they had to show coaches what they can do. There are a lot of guys that might not get practice squad spots either, but this can kind of serve as that. I don't think we're going to see, Kurt Warner resurrected here. I don't, Tommy right. Maddox isn't going to win the XFL championship and MVP and then go on to be a starting quarterback for a couple of seasons. I do think, though, there are skill position players that are going to get a look in the NFL because of the tape they put down here. Defensive backs, wide receivers in particular, those athletic positions that have multiple uses on a team. There'll be a couple of them that we'll be talking about by the end of the year, I'm sure.
Combine is coming up. And now, it's only my opinion, but I felt the Steelers went through a little period of time where I think they valued the combine almost too much. And I think it cost them a little bit. How do you think the Steelers or any team needs to view the combine?
My opinion on the combine, and this isn't something that is typically shared throughout media, but by and large, the combine is there to, one, confirm the athletic abilities that they've seen in person and on tape of players, just to make sure that they're doing it right. But two and three are probably bigger, to give them one last medical look up close, make sure that, any injuries that they may have heard of or anything like that, they know what they're getting into with that, and to sit down with them for 15 minutes and talk to them, find out who they are, from a character perspective. Who are they as people? Asking questions about their background, whatever. Get a good sense of who they are so you can check those boxes. And that's something that's going to differ team to team, depending on who they are. I mean, they could be the greatest guy in the world. That bumps them up from, a priority undrafted free agent signing into a seventh-round pick, somebody that they're willing to invest a pick into. That's really important. When you're putting together your entire big board, you want to make sure that you have as much information as you can. And this is the one thing you don't have a full 24/7, 365 to evaluate. You can watch film until you're blue in the face and find out everything that a player has done throughout his entire collegiate career. You don't get to know who they really are when you're talking to them, asking the questions that you want to ask them, not what they've said in the media, not what they've said through their schools or what the opinion of their coach is of that player. It gives them more of an opportunity to get the stuff that it's going to be hard for them to do, because from there, only so many guys you can take out to dinner after their pro day. There are only so many opportunities you have to get to know them as individuals. And for the Steelers, it seems like they've really prioritized that. They've wanted to get to know the players that they end up drafting. And there's a good indication the players that they have a a good feel on are the ones that they sat down with. They take guys out to dinner all the time after, you know, usually the bigger school pro days. And those are often guys they take in the first two rounds of the draft. So for them, I think you're right to an extent that they might have valued athleticism perhaps a little bit too high. And it's an argument you can make on either side of the fence, whether it's more important than actual football skills. When you're drafting 25 and later as often as they have over the years, sometimes you got to take the guy that has, you know, the largest standout trait among them. And I'm thinking about Terrell Edmonds, for example. Great athlete,
right.
Probably not the best football player, and a guy that they knew was going to be a project. And I think through 2 years, we're seeing that now. But you and I have talked about Bud Dupree I don't know how many times. And this past season, exactly what they thought they would develop Dupree into. And they got that, finally. It might have been a year too late. Somebody else is going to pay him now. But for the most part, I think getting to know who they are is going to be more important than what they should already know based on their film.
How many, in reality, how much development is there in the NFL? Because it just seems to me like either you can play or they move on to somebody else.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a lot of it can depend on where the team is. If you bring in a new coach who slashes half the roster, brings in a bunch of young guys, and I'm thinking of John Gruden in Oakland, in Las Vegas, excuse me, that seems to be kind of their three-year plan. They wanted to really overhaul the guys that they had, get a lot younger, and rebuild their team from there. I think with that, you might have a little bit more tolerance to, you know, a little bit more time committed to developing guys. And with that, you're bringing in coaches that will coach to that. You see that with the Steelers. This is kind of the only news that's come out of the team lately. They're looking around for a new wide receivers coach. The names that have come up seem to be kind of younger guys with college experience, which fits in line with the younger position group. Maybe that's what they feel is necessary right now. They've got to get more fundamental work in with these guys. So bring in a coach who's been doing real fundamental work with younger players over the last couple of years, which kind of seems to be what McClendon's background is. I'm not sure if he's been the guy that they've hired yet. I've heard kind of conflicting reports on it, which is funny for a position coach. But by and large, you're seeing teams that are prepared to win are going with veterans, and the backup guys better show they're worth something or they're out the door. There are teams that do that year in and year out. And there are teams that really just kind of need to break everything down and start from scratch. I think they might have a little bit, a little less extreme of a learning curve. But by and large, they're not going to spend a whole lot of time teaching you the absolute basics unless they've invested a lot in you, like a first or a second round draft pick. And you don't see guys like that getting taken in the first round all that often.
Give me a couple of positions they'll need to look at.
Oh, that's for me. I think it's every position, to be honest. The only reason I say that, because what we saw last season was not just the absence of a quarterback. What we saw was a running backs group that was devastated with the absence of Le'Veon Bell, which they did not expect. James Conner, yes, I understand he's a good player. He's not healthy all that often. They've invested a lot into mid-round running backs and didn't get consistent, great performance from any one of them. At receiver, they've certainly invested a bunch into those positions, and we saw some good things out of that. They're still a very young group, and to lose Antonio Brown from that and to have the unthinkable happened with Darryl Drake passing away during training camp. It was a group that, frankly, grossly outperformed, I think, what you could realistically expect from a group that was that young, to have Ray Sherman, a guy that didn't want to coach a position. That's why he was just helping out. To have him jump in and teach these really young players, that's a real tough spot for all of them to be in. I think they might want to add another one later, probably more for like a special teams type of role. But value at that position, I think, is essential in the NFL. It's always good to have a couple of them coming up. You don't know what's going to happen with Juju Smith-Schuster's contract. You never know what can happen there. So maybe that's a position they want to address as well. Tight end, though, I think is probably the biggest. I think I said this last year, too. I don't want to parrot the same stuff over and over, but they're in the same position this year they were last year, except they don't even have a Xavier Grimble anymore. They're not doing it with the Zach Gentry. They're going to need to find a high-end guy. It wouldn't surprise me if that's going to be their primary target in the second round of this draft.
I would ask you about the Pirates, but I want to keep the show positive. So thanks so much, Neil. Appreciate it. Get to your plane.
Definitely. Thanks for having me, guys. We'll talk to you.
Neil Coulong, USA Today. We'll come back with more in a moment from Lafayette, Indiana, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Sunbury Motors Ford is coming off with their best-selling year in its 105-year history. SMC is committed to Ford Motor Company to sell 1,000 new Fords in 2020. Wow! Pick from 25 of the totally redesigned 2020 Ford Escapes. And they start as low as $21,960. Take up to $7,500 off MSRP of the all-new 2020 Ford Explorer. And they're priced from just $33,965. Sunbury Motors is Central PA's truck capital. Choose from over 120 Ford F-150s and Super Duties. Super Duty. The F-Series truck has been the number one selling vehicle for 43 consecutive years, and SMC has them on sale for as low as $26,794. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, proudly serving the Susquehanna Valley's transportation needs for over a century.
Great to have you with us on the show today. Penn State and Purdue coming up tonight. We'll have a reporter who covers Purdue for the Lafayette Journal-Courier on the show in just a few moments. Because Purdue, yeah, you say, oh, they're 14-10. Yeah, a little bit better than that. They're playing pretty well right now. They're probably playing their best basketball of the year. I felt like that win over Northwestern in Evanston the other night where really, I mean, a few minutes to go, the game's given up for lost, or at least it seems like it is. And Purdue rallied from 8 down with 3 minutes to go and won the game on the road. Well, then they blew out Iowa. I mean, it blew them out. And then they followed that up with a win in Indiana. They can shoot the three, but if Penn State can get a handle on that tonight defensively, Penn State can win the game. Do I think Penn State's the better team? Yes, I think they're the better team. Purdue playing here is really good, though. Always have been. Now, they're 10-2 here. When Penn State went to play Michigan State last week, they were 10-1 at home, and their only loss was to, the long name coach. That's right, Duke. Yeah, Mike Krzyzewski. They were the only ones that had beaten them there so far. Then Penn State went in there 1-5. So Penn State looks for its seventh straight win tonight. Maryland is playing tonight. Maryland plays Nebraska. They're at home. They will be and should be the prohibitive favorite there. And Michigan State is at Illinois tonight. So that's the conference night. And the one team that feels, I think, pretty good about where it is going into its game tonight has got to be Maryland because, I mean, Nebraska's struggling right now. I mean, they're really struggling. Next year, when he gets his recruits in there, supposedly he has a really good recruiting class, then you may see a different the beginnings of a different Nebraska program. But that's not there yet. And right now I think they're, a 17.5-point underdog? And that's probably, it's going to be about a 20-point game tonight in College Park. Maryland's playing confidently. Nebraska's not. And it gets to a point when you're in that spot. Yeah, look, and I've seen this firsthand, where the margin of error is so thin, you feel like you have to play perfect. And okay, you're playing perfectly, and then all of a sudden, one little thing goes wrong. And suddenly, that one little thing that goes wrong shakes everybody's confidence. Because you haven't been winning. Thus, you get your confidence shaken. So that is, that's where Nebraska is right now. Maryland can have 8 things go wrong and go, yeah, okay, we're fine. Yeah. And that is the way it is. Anything on the Phillies you want to say? Because pitchers and catchers are reporting, so it's
No, Joe Girardi just had a couple of his normal words that he's had since he's taken over of positivity and ready to roll and thinks this is a good group. And we'll see.
Oh, they're all like that.
Exactly right.
I mean, even the Marlins and the Pirates are like, hey! Right? And like,
Well, the Pirates have some right with their new regime coming in, but that'll die down after a while once they start playing baseball.
No.
I think just the breath of fresh air will just be nice for Pirate fans this year, regardless of what happens.
No. My prediction is this, that the Pirates will not draw 1.5 million fans this season.
Still wouldn't be surprising.
Now, you got to break it down. That means the Pirates would have to average less than 18,000 a game. I think you have to average like 18.5 to get to 1.5 million. So if you're averaging less than 18, you're not going to get there. Well, I mean, they weren't going last year. Now, I will say this. Those who do go to Pirate games, you know what, where they're going to make some money? Programs with rosters. Yeah, who's 22?
That's what? So true.
Where did he play? Really? All right, go 22. I love you.
Hey, at least tickets will be cheap.
No, they won't.
Oh. Never mind.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Here in Lafayette, Indiana, we're at the top of the hour. Dick Girardi, Joe Girardi, probably using Joe's car. We'll pick me up here at the hotel, and we'll drive over to the arena. Now, on the network, we're going to be on at 6 o'clock tonight, and the game's at 6:30. You'll join us in progress following Shikellamy Wrestling tonight. Steve Williams will have that for you. At 7 o'clock this evening. Is it right up at 7 or is it going to be like 7:06?
Right up at 7.
Right up at 7. Okay. And then you'll join us in progress tonight. Then back in the Sunbury Motors studio tomorrow to look back on tonight's game and then look forward to Saturday. And Saturday's going to be something. You've got a basketball wrestling day-night doubleheader. Penn State basketball with Northwestern at noon. Okay, so 13th-ranked Penn State and Northwestern at noon. And at 7:30, 2nd-ranked Penn State and 3rd-ranked Ohio State in wrestling. Now, that's a wow day-night doubleheader. You could have, when it's all said and done, and on this show, there normally is a lot more said than done, you could have nearly 30,000 people go through the turnstiles of the Jordan Center on Saturday. How about that? That's remarkable. Penn State goes for its 7th consecutive win tonight. They're 18-5 overall. They are 8-4 in the Big Ten. Currently a game back of Maryland in the Big Ten standings. Penn State's tied with Illinois at 8-4 and in second place. Purdue's 14-10. They've won 3 in a row. The win at Northwestern. They clobbered Iowa and then won at Indiana Saturday. So they won 3 in a row and they played terrific at Mackey Arena. Terrific. And that's the setup for tonight. Purdue has been playing great lately. Let's find out why. Mike Carman joins us from the Lafayette Journal Courier. Mike, welcome. It is great to have you with us on the show today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right. Purdue's won 3 in a row, seems to be playing its best basketball of the year. Why?
I think they kind of figured out who they are and what they need to do, and started playing a little bit better away from home. You know, they don't have the Carson Edwards or the Ryan Klein type of player that can hit you 4 3-pointers in a row and take over a game. They just don't have that kind of player this year, and it's just taken them a while to figure out their roles, where their shots should come from. And just kind of, you know, it was a young team at the beginning of the year, even though a lot of these guys did play last year. They didn't play in the same roles that they're playing this year. And when they got out on the road, they just didn't have that experience and that mental toughness that you need to win in the Big Ten. But slowly they've kind of figured some of that out. A lot of it is who you play, when you play them type of thing. But they seem to be pointing in the right direction right now. They feel really good when they play at Mackey Arena, as I assume people can relate to. I think tonight will be a very interesting game. I think it'll be a close game, and because the way Penn State plays, the way they play defense, you know, I think this will be a very, very tight game, I think.
All right, so I want to get to the fact that Matt plays 9 in his rotation. It looks to me as if 7 of the 9 are not only capable but can be very good 3-point shooters. What has that done to open up the floor?
That's done a lot, and they've emphasized a little bit more taking the 3-point shot as opposed to trying to shoot in the mid-range game. They feel there's more benefit with the 3-pointer. It's either a 3-pointer or get to the rim, one of the two. And they don't get to the foul line a whole lot. So they focused a little bit more on the 3-point shot. But one of Matt's main things, he's been doing it for 15 years here, is just making sure they have good ball movement. And the more better ball movement you have, the better chance your shooters are going to be open once it's their time. And a guy like Sasha Stefanovic doesn't need a lot of room to shoot. They've gotten a lot of good contributions from the freshman, Isaiah Thompson. Eric Hunter has picked up his three-point game here over the last three games. Jahad Proctor is a guy that can shoot the three ball well too. So they have the weapons to do it. It just hasn't consistently been there. It's been more there at Mackey Arena than on the road, but that's kind of how they've evolved a little bit this year.
What have you? By the way, with Stefanovic, that may be the quickest release I've seen all season. I mean, his release—he's very hard to cover because, as you say, he doesn't need space. He doesn't need space because of his release, which is tremendous.
Yeah, it is. It's just you just wonder if he's just throwing it up there or is he actually shooting it, because it comes so quick. But he's a guy that's ready to shoot. He's ready to shoot at all times, and it's. The way that it flows from when he gets the ball to when he releases it is just so quick that it makes defending him difficult. You really have to be on him. And I think it was Illinois that probably did the best job on him as far as not giving him the space to shoot when they played here on January 21st. And that's a game, you know, Purdue struggled him offensively a little bit. But Illinois had the horses to do that too, and I'm sure Penn State, you know, it's a copycat league. They're going to probably try to do something similar tonight.
With the exception of trying to step on his chest like Alan Griffin. I don't think that's in the game plan.
No,
okay.
No, I hope not.
I hope not either. Inside, what has Williams' present meant inside? And also, what is his passing from the post meant to what we just talked about?
It's remarkable how well the big man passes and who he sees in the corner. And a lot of it is just he's expecting you to be there. He's expecting a certain player to be in the corner or on the wing on the opposite side. It's just the way kind of their offense runs. And you better be there. And he is really good at taking a glance and then, boom, shoving it out there. And, you know, I think that's a little bit why he doesn't get double-teamed as much, is because they're fearful of his passing. I mean, Michigan didn't double-team him at all, and he went off for 36 and 20.
Right.
But still had some passes out of that. You know, and that's just the philosophy Michigan has. You know, Purdue's philosophy is they do like to double the post, but not everybody does that, and that's, you know, that's just kind of the way it goes. But he's had a lot of one-on-one matchups this year. He likes to back guys down, and he's usually pretty efficient finishing around the rim. He was 3-for-11 the other night at Indiana, but they got away with it because they had all nine players scored at least 5 points. So they had good balance the other night. There'll be nights, it might be tonight, where he needs to be more efficient around the rim. But he has shown he can be that player.
Over the years, there have been some really good on the ball defenders here. Of course, Chris Kramer is the gold standard of that. But they have no Jell Eastern. Has he been that kind of lockdown defender that Matt had been hoping for?
He's played pretty good defensively, but he's kind of been back and forth. He's defended the four a lot this year when they go to a little bit smaller lineup, but he's also defended guards out there. I mean, defense is still the strength of his game, and he's a solid defender, and he'll show that tonight. But he's kind of mixed and matched a little bit. He's gone back and forth from the perimeter to the post, just depending on who they're playing. I don't know if he'll end up on Lamar Stevens at all tonight. That might not be the best thing, but I think Eastern's strong enough to kind of hang in there. And he does know what to do defensively. And, you know, I think he's caused some havoc this year in the Big Ten with his play on the defensive level. And he's still regarded as one of the league's top defenders.
Matt Harms, obviously at 7'3", is a presence out there. What kind of energy does he bring that they need?
Well, he's coming off the bench now. And, you know, if that's one thing, if you look, I think the last five games for Purdue, and Matt Painter has mixed and matched his starting lineup a little bit, but they're averaging probably 25 to 30 points a game coming off the bench in the last five games, and Harms has been part of that. He gives you the inside dimension, but also he can step out and hit those threes. And if post players don't go out with him, he will shoot it. But he's also been really good in the diving action toward the basket, where he's able to get some dunks. And those plays have kind of surfaced a little bit more over the last couple games, where he's become a pretty good viable force on the offensive end. And he was a big key Saturday when Indiana got it within six, and he scored five straight points, one on a three-point play that kind of put the game away. So he comes off the bench and brings energy. He hits the boards hard, but also his offensive game is kind of rounding in the form a little bit.
The game at Northwestern, Mike, where, let's face it, it was like that little margin where you almost could give it up for lost. What did that comeback do, Mike, to really change the dynamics here?
Well, it kind of propelled them, you know, and I had a story written that Purdue had lost because I had to. And I had to change a bunch of stuff. I mean, you're down eight with under three to go. I mean, you got to pick a direction at some point. But it just kind of propelled them. And it propelled them into what happened against Iowa, and part of that was Purdue, and part of that's Iowa just not really, you know, they're just not a great defensive club, and Purdue was able to get.
You noticed that, did you?
Well, that's a common thing. Every year we hear that Iowa's going to turn it around defensively, and then by two games in, it's like, nah, they're back to the same old stuff. But you know, they're able to play downhill in the Iowa game, and that game just kind of got out of control. But you could see the confidence level in them playing against IU, and with all the things that were going on in Assembly Hall on Saturday with the return of Bob Knight and the rivalry game, you know, Purdue played with a different kind of composure than they had in previous road games. So it's been a boost to their confidence. They felt like if they could get one road game, then other things would fall into place for them. They still have some tough road environments to go to. They still have some tough home games to go through. The team really hasn't changed. I think they have a small margin for error in all their games, but if they get hot in some certain areas, they can really extend leads. But they're just playing with a different confidence level right now, and when we get to the end of the season or we go into the Big Ten tournament, we'll probably look back at that Northwestern game at the end of it and say that might have been the turning point for them.
Mike, I know Bob Knight's not doing well. I mean, it's something I think all of us have known for a while. He's not doing great. And Gene Cady both appeared that night in a Pacers game, too. I don't think a lot of people realize that. What was it like to sit there to at least see the reception he received in Assembly Hall being there for the first time in 20 years?
Well, it was special. Now, I'm a guy who grew up in Indiana, you know, and I was alive and well to watch Bob Knight's teams play during his tenure in Indiana. So I know that era. I know what he meant to that program. I know what he means to the state of Indiana from a basketball standpoint. But it was special. It was special for those fans that have been waiting for him to come back. And I think deep down it was special for Bob Knight as well to finally get that out of the way. And it should have happened several years ago.
Yes.
For a variety of reasons, but it didn't. It happened Saturday. And, you know, it brings some closure to a really special era of Indiana basketball, at least from my standpoint, because you could, you know, you had to beat Indiana to go through the Big Ten back then. That was the team that was the team you looked at to say, you got to beat them. And that's what Gene Cady did when he got to Purdue. He had to beat Indiana if he wanted to win the Big Ten championship. And that created 41 great games between Purdue and Indiana during their tenure together. But the reception he received, the fact that a lot of his former players were there, just kind of wrapped up the day for the Indiana folks as a good day, and a day that now that they can put in the past, but also still remember a little bit about it. And I to be honest, I thought Indiana's current team would play with a little bit more emotion than what they did.
Yeah, me too.
Knowing Knight had spoke to them before the game, and then coming out at halftime, Purdue kind of took control right after halftime and never really let Indiana back in the game.
Finally, Mike, what are your thoughts on Penn State to this point?
Just a fabulous job that they're doing right now. I mean, to win at Michigan State, they're doing it. I mean, they're kind of getting hot at the right time. You have the main scorer, you have the one guy that can take over a game, but you've got some other parts that are slowly getting better, or maybe quickly getting better. You would know more than I, but it seems like every night, beyond Lamar Stevens, they get somebody or a group of guys to do just a little bit more to push them over the top. And, you know, that's what you need. And I know that they can kind of smell a Big Ten championship because they're only one game out. And if they don't get it, it doesn't mean they can't go deep in the NCAA tournament or go deep in the Big Ten tournament. But it seems like this team is built for some sort of tournament run, whether it be the Big Ten or the NCAA. And, you know, as long as they keep pushing forward and doing the right things, which I know they will. I mean, they're road tested. They have the most road wins in the Big Ten this year. So the environment should not affect them tonight, and any environment should not affect them at all the rest of the year. But I like where they're at. I like what they're doing. And, you know, this is a team, I think, you know, it didn't get in the top 16 reveal on Saturday, but it's a team that, if they continue to do what they're doing, I think will be in that grouping come Selection Sunday.
Mike, an absolute pleasure. I look forward to seeing you tonight.
All right. Thank you for having me.
And wrap it up, the Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK. Matt Catrillo here with you. Steve is en route now to Penn State and Purdue tonight from West Lafayette. You can hear him tonight, heard here on WKOK, after Shikellamy Wrestling, which is on air at 7 o'clock. The Braves hosting Belfont, and then we'll join Penn State and Purdue in progress later on tonight on WKOK. And this just tweeted just a couple minutes ago by Ben Jones of statecollege.com per spokesperson. Myron Jones will not play tonight due to the illness that he's had the last couple of days. And we told you yesterday he did make the trip with Penn State to West Lafayette. But now, spokesperson saying he's not playing tonight. So that's a little concerning for Penn State going forward as to why they brought him out in the first place. As Steve made the point yesterday, it seemed that if you were to bring him out in close confines on a plane with the rest of his teammates to make this trip, you would think he'd be well enough to play the game tonight, but now he's not. So I'm curious, maybe something happened overnight and just didn't wake up, just didn't feel as good as he was feeling the other day. But if so, then Penn State's got to be able to make sure that everybody stays away from him and he gets home maybe separately or he stays away from everybody on the plane on the way back. So we'll have to keep an eye on that one, but hopefully Myron Jones will return for Penn State's next game after tonight against Purdue. So we'll see what happens here tonight. Purdue is actually a 5-point favorite tonight, but then Penn State is favored to win 6 of those last 7 games, and KenPom has given Penn State a 37% shot to win tonight. And looking on the next set of games that Penn State has coming up, I thought this would be kind of the scare game, quote-unquote, because of how good Purdue's been at home this year with beating a couple of numerous good opponents at home. Penn State's coming off the big win, but I wouldn't be surprised if Penn State wins this game tonight either. It's going to be a close one, and I think Steve's right when he said earlier they had to be able to defend the 3-point line well. And I think if they do that, they will win. They'll find a way to win this game because I think they're just a little bit stronger inside. They got to stay out of foul trouble, though, as well. That'll be pretty key. So Mike Watkins has to have a good game. But just the one thing that you've got confidence now with Penn State going forward is that you know they're going to have – they have been battle-tested and they've been able to make big shots and make big defensive stops when they need to. And that could win them this game again tonight. They're probably going to have to do that. So we'll see what happens, and we'll be talking about it tomorrow when Steve returns to the Sunbury Motors studio from West Lafayette tonight. Join him and Dick Girardi and the rest of the gang after we're done with Chickalemme Wrestling here on WKOK for Penn State and Purdue. Today's show was brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Thanks so much for joining us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. We'll talk tomorrow.